Welcome to the Responsible Management Podcast from the University of Bradford School of Management. This is a podcast for our KTN community, the local business community, that we provide on a monthly basis to talk about all issues to do with responsible management. My name is David Spicer, and I'm the school's Director of Business and Community Engagement. I'm delighted to be once again hosting the podcast. I've got two great speakers with me today. We're going to be talking about effective communication. To introduce them first, Stephen Peacock has 37 years of experience working in the power industry in various roles. He's engaged with a wide range of people at all levels in different business areas. This, albeit sometimes challenging experience, has been the basis of his learning how to communicate effectively with a diverse range of people. He started his coaching business in 2020, and this has allowed him to use that experience to support others. He has a specific interest in how we communicate effectively or otherwise with each other in business and in our personal lives. Our second contributor is Dr. George Medine. George is in danger of becoming a podcast regular. It's his third time of joining us. He's assistant professor in leadership and management here at the School of Management. And as well as experience in higher education, he's extensive industry experience as well, having set up half a dozen of his own businesses and been director for at least half a dozen more. He's been a business consultant as well and has a particular interest in the psychology of the workplace. Stephen, George, great to be talking to you today. So, you know this, George, we always start with a question. What does responsible management mean to you? So I'll come to you, Stephen.
Responsible management, to me, leadership really is about vision and strategy, whereas management is about making sure that you've got effective teams, strong behaviours, setting standards, making sure that there are strong ethics. So there's quite a distinct difference, and managers should look to develop coaching and mentoring skills as well as part of their skills portfolio.
So it's about a way of managing, I guess. Something you'd recognise, George?
I had a look at it from the academic side, bearing in mind I now work for the University of Bradford last couple of years. And one of the things it is one of those diffuse business school ideas that has sustainability in there, ethics in there, and responsibility. Now, all of those are equally hard to define.
Great, thank you. So we're talking today about communication. I'm going to ask, I think, a fairly obvious question. Why do businesses need to be concerned with communication? Why is it something they should be focusing on?
I think a number of reasons. Firstly, it's important that people that work within an organisation understand the rules of the game. If it's not clear for what their role is, what the vision of the business is, people invariably make up their own rules. And when people make up their own rules, things can start to go awry. So there's got to be an absolute drive within an organisation for managers to ensure that there's freedom for individual thought, creativity and creating new ideas. But the basis of communication must be that there are certain rules and guidelines that people need to adhere to.
I think Stephen's just nailed it there. If you don't know what you're trying to do, then you don't stand much chance of actually achieving it there. And I think communication is grossly undervalued. The textbooks love it. And everyone goes, we need to increase communication. One of my pet hates, how the hell do you do it? Damn sight harder to do in practice. But if you don't know what you're trying to do, then there's no way you're going to achieve your goals.
That's great. I mean, minded of Cotter, and he talks about one of the major failures of change being under communication. So I think we all kind of recognise this. And I guess there's a responsible management element to this, in that responsibility to provide information in the right way at the right time so that people are informed about the business and all those kind of sorts of things as well. You both recognise that?
Absolutely, yeah.
Sure.
So moving it on then, what does effective communication look like? If we're talking about communication being important, is this about a set of best practices or does it depend on context, the firm, the people?
Well, very much so. I would like to respond to that by focusing on a real area of interest for me, and that's how people interface and communicate with each other. If people don't understand their own communication style, their own behavioural styles, and look for how to understand the styles of others, you have got very little chance of having meaningful, positive interaction. If people understand their style, for example, if they're a really directive type of individual, if they understand that style and understand the impact that has on others, then they've got a chance of modifying their behaviour, growing and developing their own style to make sure that any personal interaction they have, both parties or teams get the most out of that interaction, which is positive for the business. Otherwise, you can have a really destructive influence in people, either consciously or unconsciously.
I look at communication as four main elements. And when we've looked at communication in business before, when we've gone into sort out communication problems, the first thing is actually role clarity. What is your job? And within that, there's a number of tasks that you do. So the next one is task clarity. So what's your job and what are your tasks within that job? The next one comes down to really simple, what resources have you got to do the job? So resource clarity, and that can be your budgets, the people, the support you've got. And then the final one, somewhat academically speaking, is metrics clarity. In other words, how am I going to measure you've actually done your job? And if those are crystal clear, people tend to achieve what you want them to achieve. And crucially, what we did find is that all of those directly related to retention, one of the biggest issues out there at the moment, if you don't know what you're trying to do, when you're trying to do it, and you're not getting feedback, that's a retention nightmare.
And you both must have seen examples of the impact of this getting it wrong. Are there any of those that obviously don't need to name the guilty that we can share?
I mean, I've got an example. It's a fairly common example, I think, in the modern world is the introduction of new IT systems and the communication and training that was required to put a new IT system in place, very often done online, very little face-to-face hand-holding training up front, and the impact on people when they actually have to start using the system. From personal experience, I've seen, without naming any individuals or organisations, was quite destructive, actually, sadly. And it would leave certainly older people who were maybe less IT savvy to leave the organisation. It was a great learning experience for me, and I certainly learned a lot from that. And if I was ever involved in an organisation doing that sort of thing again, giving advice from a coaching, mentoring perspective, I would certainly be able to give a different perspective.
I've got an example of a local business. Can't tell you who it was, but it's not far from here. And they had a problem with communication because they actually called me in to say, why are so many people leaving? We had a 20% turnover rate, 20% of people left each year. And when I went to the place, normally staff aren't happy. Got the place, staff really happy. Wages excellent. They would give them free food, breakfast and all this. Couldn't work out what the problem was. And when we were actually sort of looking at it, it was this idea of what is your job? Well, we're creatives and nobody's really given us guidelines. And lack of communication of what was expected induced so much stress in some of the people, they actually left. And that was fundamentally a communication problem rather than a we treat our staff well problem.
That's interesting. Can I then maybe just add to that, George, that you're saying that a lack of clarity led to poor staff retention despite a lot of very positive hygiene factors. However, if people know they've got the freedom to express themselves and come up with ideas, how much guidance do you actually require?
This is, Dave mentioned it being, I'm into the psychology of how things. And one of the things we found is there's a thing called need for validation, which is tell me I'm doing okay.
Yeah.
And people become fearful if you don't know what your job is properly, because no one's made it clear to you that I'm not doing my job well. And young people in particular have high need for validation. Tell me I'm doing okay. And the fear that I'm not doing okay, that was one of the key factors that they were driving off.
So that's a bit of a cultural thing then. If the culture was right in the organisation, that might not occur. So maybe that's a look at the culture.
And one of the things is they deliberately gave them a lot of freedom. It was a creative industry that it was in. And the idea was that you can be as creative, no rules. But when you don't give people rules, how the hell do I know what to do? And how do I get told I'm doing okay when they're doing it? Doing exactly the opposite of what they needed to do with the younger people.
Yeah,
and that
yeah.
was a big problem.
That's good.
But that's back to the nuance of communication, isn't it? So freedom, autonomy is not absence of communication or absence of management. It's back to what you said, Stephen, about it's about being there to coach, to mentor, to support, to provide the feedback that people need. You go back to being an academic for 2 seconds, you go back to fundamental work on goal setting in the 1970s, all the evidence there was that you can do all of this wonderful stuff setting goals for people, but if that doesn't have feedback alongside it, it's pointless. People have that need for validation, that need for support, and that kind of effective communication is key, I guess. So we've talked about it as an overarching concept, but I think thinking about, you know, the detail of when you communicate, so the choice that you have as a manager or leader in an organization about when do you put a message out, how do you put a message out, how important is that? So the micro decisions about, I could send this message at 5 o'clock on Friday or 9 o'clock on Monday morning. Is that significant?
I've just done an assignment for my guys in management at the moment. And the big thing was about communication. And I said, when you tell me about communication, I want to know who says what to whom, when do they say it, what medium do they say it, what do you tell them? Now, we had a great example a couple of years ago with P&O. You all got sacked by text. And P&O got trashed by the general population. And I think they lost 98% of the business because of the way they'd done it, this text. And the golden rule is you've got to tell people in a manner that they understand. It's got to be perceived as to be fair. When do you tell them? Ideally before the event happens. Who tells them? If it's a local matter, as in your team, typically a line manager. However, if it's a big decision, you want the big boss to come and tell you the big stuff. And do we get a chance to have feedback? Give us a voice. And that is all crucial to do it.
I suppose it does depend very much on the size of the organisation as well. If you've got a small organisation and you've got 10 to 20 people, the leaders are very close to the staff normally on a day-to-day basis. So communication can take on a form of you can gather everybody together in a room and have a chat. If you've got large corporate organisations and there's, as you said, George, a big announcement made, that might come from the chief executive, could be done via a corporate broadcast. It depends what the impact is going to be. If it's going to actually impact in people's jobs and their livelihoods, they've got to know that it's got to be done in a sensitive way. And then with ongoing support by local line management to follow up on major organisational structural change announcements.
That key word, sensitivity, is absolutely crucial, because when people get bad news, they become extremely sensitive. The big problem we have at the moment is everything's on the internet forever. So we deconstruct your words to make sure that we become as sensitive as possible to the bad news and how it impacts on me. And why would they say that in such a manner at that time? And unfortunately, that's one of the latest things with the social media we have now. It comes back to bite us for a long time afterwards. And you know what? In a small organization, you might say something to people. They get it because they can see your mannerisms. Nowadays, social media, not so sure.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting, the sort of context as well. Depending on the economic climate, it can have different impacts. If you're in a burgeoning economic climate, then decisions about structural changes that some people might not like, and they say, well, I'm going to use my feet and walk and get employment elsewhere, fine, it doesn't have such a massive impact. But that shouldn't change the way we communicate as a matter of principle with people in an organisation. Whether there's a buoyant climate or not, communication for big announcements should always be done in a sensitive manner.
Yeah, can I ask a question? It's not my job to ask the questions.
You think you're allowed on your third one, Joe.
Should we train people in communication?
Should we train people in communication? Absolutely. Should you train all your staff? Should all the staff in an organisation go on a communication training course? It depends what you want to get out of it. I think as part of development of staff, whatever the size of the organisation, I think training people, and it goes back to what I said earlier about understanding their own communication style, understanding, recognising the styles of others, and being aware of tips and technique to be able to really optimise what the output they get from interactions with individuals. So that sort of training, I think, is invaluable for everybody in an organisation.
I'm just cutting into the podcast to tell you a little bit about the offer that we have for businesses locally as part of the business and community engagement support. We have our Knowledge Transfer Network, that's regular networking events where you can come on campus, meet like-minded people, hear from some of our and leading industry experts. We have our Bradford Business Challenge projects, where we have students coming out and working with you and supporting the work that you do. We have our consultancy clinic, where we have students delivering on short-term small projects for businesses as well. There's also lots of ways that you can engage with and interact with our students as guest lecturers, as mentors on some of our entrepreneurship programs, and through involvement in the curriculum. And equally, from a research perspective, we can work with you on collaborative research. If you think there's something we can help with, please reach out to us at BACE, that's base, BACE, at bradford.ac.uk. Thank you, and now back to the podcast. Nida, there's a understanding what effective communication looks like from every point of view. So it's almost your role in communication, isn't it? That actually, yes, there's a, we've talked about the responsibility of leaders and managers to communicate in the right way, but also you've got to be receptive for that communication to be effective. You've got to give feedback in the right way, and then that's got to be received. So everybody understanding that is kind of key and kind of critical. I'm also thinking, coming back to the should we train, the particular contexts which are very communication heavy and where the impact of communication is key, thinking about communication in those is really important. So you and I've got many years of teaching people like MBA students, you know, and talking to MBA students around things like managing people, handling a difficult conversation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How are you going to deal with performance management issues? A lot of MBA students still to this day might be a bit gung-ho about that. Mm-hmm. They just need telling. We need to sit them down and tell them what's wrong. It's okay. So let's have that. And that's what I've done in class. Let's have that conversation. Let's role play this. And they'll do that. They'll sit me down and they'll, right, the problem with you is usually with a wagging finger because they want to make their point and then you deflect or you don't recognize what's being said to you, which are all typical reactions in those situations. But if we're not aware of those responses and how to manage the communication to go in prepared, so that's the point in those sorts of situations, that you don't go into that conversation unless you're prepared to have that conversation. So you've got your evidence, you've got your data, you can support the conversation you're wanting to have and then present it in the right way. All of that is kind of aspects of communication training. I would argue it's fundamental. Mm-hmm. You asked the question, George. So.
Well, one of the things that I'm a great advocate of is training our line managers. Because we talked before about feedback being part of the communication. A lot of line managers avoid feedback in communication for fear of personal ridicule or they get attacked or they perceive to be attacked. And I'm a great advocate of training these people. Another little technique that we use is to use a facilitator. And I've done this role myself. When you get the guys want to be given a voice, i.e. we can ask questions, very often you want to make a statement that can't be answered. Why is this place so bad? It's just an exit. It goes nowhere. But if you ask, why are we doing this particular thing at this moment? It's a question that can be answered. And so a facilitator can turn statements into, well, let's turn that into a question that can be answered. And that is a really positive way of communicating between staff and managers who don't get personal communications.
Yeah. You'd recognize that in your practices as well, Stephen?
I think so, yes, yes. I mean, it's important not to over communicate as well.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes, and you can be, you know, you can be criticized for not communicating as a leader or a manager, but equally criticized for over communicating. So you've got to get the balance right. Make sure that the communication is meaningful. One thing I think is very important is that people like to see the impact of what they're doing. So the metrics. And if you get key metrics from a business performance and you can say, actually, your contribution here is important because we've achieved this and this and this. Mm-hmm. And that makes people feel better.
It does. One of the things, and I've made this mistake myself when I have my own business, is that you tell people in 15 grand is not a great deal of profit these days. But when you're a domestic person, the average guy working, 15 grand is a huge amount of money. So we said, we made 15 grand this week. Look, we're doing well on our thing. You know, look at all that money that guy's making. God, I'm earning that guy all that money. And I learned many years ago, if you're making senior management, you're talking tens of thousands, but the guy on the bottom floor sees £10,000 is an enormous sum. And when you start and give those metrics back to them, sometimes they can come back and bite you on the butt. And unfortunately, my butt is well bitten.
That's back to the sensitivity and the empathy thing, isn't it? Saying when we're communicating, is recognizing the position of the person in the conversation. Yeah, it's a similar sort of example, I think. But I remember being in this sector in a managerial role, wanting to get out of the building. I had a family appointment to kind of get to, so, and I'd left it slightly later than I should have done to leave the building. And you leave your office and you run the gauntlet of the people that, because they've seen you, urgently need to talk to you about something. Not urgent enough to come and speak to you, but urgent enough that now they've actually seen you, they go, oh, yes, I urgently need to talk to you about this. And it's like, first person, really sorry. Can you come and find me tomorrow? Yes, I'll talk to you about it then. I do need to leave. Second person, yeah, that same conversation. Third person, got, and you'll know who this is, oh, my God, James, what on earth are you playing at? Leave me alone. And it's like, it's so the wrong reaction, but it's an entirely human reaction, isn't it? Now, luckily, knew that person well enough I could apologise. And slightly embarrassingly, that was the one thing that did need my attention before I left the building. But it's so easy to get it wrong, isn't it? It's because we talk about that interpersonal interaction and that, I guess, that pressure on managers on a day-to-day basis that we are going to make mistakes. But being honest about that's key.
That goes to that my door's always open time. Yeah. Whenever you want to go home at 4:30 or 5:00 and you've got the half an hour when no one's either near to get stuff done, and you get that little knock on the door, have you got 5 minutes? And your heart sinks. Now, the problem is if you don't do that, that person's probably waited all day to build up the courage to come in and talk to you. Mm-hmm. And you are going to basically suffer. If you go, can you come back tomorrow or come back later? That becomes never. And that's one of those things you've got to be careful how you put these things. Yeah. Is my door open or is it only open when I'm in a good mood and I've got plenty of spare time?
Yeah. From personal experience, and I'm sure we've all been there in the past, where you think you're sending a message in a certain way and it's totally taken the wrong way by a member of staff and they go nuts, you know, and you've got a problem on your hands and you're ending up having to think, what did I say there? What did I do wrong? And then sometimes you've got to apologise or explain why you took that approach. So it can be treading eggshells sometimes.
It's that idea that when you get an email late on, or you read an email and you snatched at the idea. And we always say to people, type it, leave it for a while, ideally till next day, then come back and reread the email and say, ooh, maybe I got that the whole wrong.
I mean, we've not talked about it. It's another great area, isn't it? So the interesting thing about so much of our communication is by email these days, we lose a lot of richness. You know, we're all in the room today. Yeah, we can feed off each other. We can feed off each other's body language. And that adds massively to the communication. An email, people will read tone into it. I've had to speak to students in the past and say, do you mind not sending emails all in capitals? You probably don't realise that the perception of the person on the other end is you're shouting, because that's the kind of the cultural kind of convention on that kind of basis. So do we have to think particularly about, and we've talked generally, but I guess that written communication, especially an email, having that filter on your email, that we're sending an email at 10:30 at night, it says it's 10:30 at night. Do you really want to be emailing your boss? How do we manage that?
I think one tip I would give everybody, especially young people who are maybe not so experienced in business, but even in your personal life, maybe your friends, you're responding to an email. You get a communication and you're responding. One thing to do is don't put the recipient's name in the send. Leave that and write your email, because it's so easy to write something just in response and send it. As you said, George, if you don't have the recipient's name in the send to, then one, you can't send it. And it gives you a chance just to stop and look. Because sometimes you can send things by mistake when you haven't completed the email. So that's one key tip. It's a very simple, non-technical tip. From personal experience, I was more reactive than I am now. So I've developed and calmed down over the years, thankfully. But experience of just firing off a response, to something without thinking too much about it, without stopping and just reading it and giving it half an hour to let things calm down and then read it again and say, well, if I was in receipt of that, what would I think? It's just going to start a lot. Some easy lessons to learn.
I think there's a cultural shift there again for a lot of organisations, in my experience, about how email is viewed these days. So email is increasingly, it feels like, viewed as an instant messaging platform. Yeah. So an email is sent and time scale between an email being sent and a follow-up being sent seems to have gone down dramatically over the years. And the trouble is we all feed into it. There is an expectation that 10 o'clock at night, I'll just have a quick flick through my emails, make sure there's nothing that's going to keep me awake at night. Or 6 o'clock in the morning, or when you're on leave, or all those sorts of things. It becomes almost an expectation. And I'm looking guiltily across the table because I know I messaged Kyle when he was on leave for something I needed urgently. And he very gratefully responded. For those that don't know, Kyle is the guy that produces this for us, who's in the room with us. So I'm now feeling guilty for brought it up. That's a dynamic that needs to be managed. And again, you know, to bring this back to, that's about the tone that managers and leaders set, I guess. So this is about culture. It's about setting things from the top. I mean, how do we convince the skeptics? Are there skeptics out there? Are there people that are not taking this seriously? What are the things that can tip the balance?
A couple of things to say here, guys. Case studies are a very useful medium. Explain to staff, this is a case study of something that's happened in the business. Whether it's a case study in safety that's gone wrong, safety that's gone well, customer service, quality issues, to explain to people. And if they can see an example and see the benefits and detriments, that's a good hard example they can use.
This is where we all disagree. The one time we disagree today.
Good. That's good.
Case studies, I always find them to be difficult and artificial. And that goes back to when I hardly ever write anything. But when I did write some stuff, it was you're limited by the word count. So you can't get the full nuances in because of what happened. And I've always thought the case studies, well, they're so limiting because they're telling you the highlights, but they're not telling you the bits that you need, the oil between the wheels that makes this stuff work. And classically, one of the things that I always look at is when we read some article or paper, I once got told, pick the top 6 things. I said, there's 64 things that I need to write about and why people don't like change. And he said, pick the top 6 because you'll never get it into the paper. And I thought, hang on, top 6 only count to 30% of the answer. Yeah, but that's all you've got word count for. And I said, well, what happened to the other 2/3 of the stuff I'm not writing about that actually makes it work? And that's why I've bit of a downer on the old case studies and stuff.
Fine.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to police that one. Somebody that teaches a lot with cases. I think it's useful if it's a tool for a conversation because the conversation brings out the nuance. If it's a, look, do it this way, it's back to communication, isn't it? It's, yeah, a case worked for me. I'm into pedagogy, I think, because it's a tool to have a conversation to communicate about the issues in the case. It's not just the piece of paper on in and of itself, but we may be talking at kind of semantics. But I guess what we're talking about is drawing on experience, learning the lessons that actually can, yeah, the way that we're going to convince people is some of those anecdotes.
No substitute for experience, that's what I found.
Yeah. So what roles do we, can we take in promoting and driving kind of this aspect of responsible management? It's part of your practice on a day-to-day basis, Stephen, I guess, as a consultant. In terms of encouraging people more generally to think about communication effectively, how can we go about doing that? It's the, what role do you take in encouraging others to think about this?
If I'm talking to a client or doing training with a team of people, I would go through a training package is my approach. And for me, it would start off with how we communicate. And we talk about things like emails, we talk about body language, we talk about interpersonal skills. And it then would move on to focus on behavioral styles and about complete performers, and we can process the performers and identify for individuals in a team, what their preferential style is. So are they a more directive type as their predominant style? Are they more amiable? Are they more expressive? Are they more analytical? And use this then to get them to expand their knowledge about themselves. And I think, as I've said before, understand looking for tips and techniques and how to deal with other types and how to get the most out of their interaction.
it's something we do regularly in class, George, isn't it? In talking with our students as well, that breaking down, well, what does good look like and where might the failures be?
Yeah.
Well, there's two things there. I'm 100% with you. The training within organisations is crucial. And a nice little tip that we can use is a three-way case study that we can do together. And it says, you, Dave, communicates with Stephen, and I, as the observer, says, well, that sounded a bit aggressive. The way you leant right close to him, that would have been the body language of interpretation, maybe a bit too much. And yet we do this without knowing we're doing it. So that little three-way, two people speaking, one observing, and then everybody has a go as the observer. And it's like this, let's give each other constructive feedback. So that's one little tip that we can do, and it's dirt cheap for all managers. The other one is in class. One of the biggest things we find with class is when you ask students a question, everyone wants this interactive stuff, and you ask a question and they all sit looking at you like we've all been struck dumb. And one of the big things that I want to know is, and this is one of the things I research, why? And one of the things when I ask students, why don't you respond in class? Why do you come up to me at the end like a swarm of bees asking me the questions that I've asked in class? And they go, we're evaluated by our peers and we don't want to appear dumb. So one of the ways I get around that is by saying, look, guys, there's no one in this class got a stronger accent than me. You might have just picked up on that, by the way. And I said, look, I get excited about this stuff because, do you know what, I love it. And so I can speak quickly and I've got a strong accent. There is no shame in not getting it. So if it's not coming across, it's me not putting it across right, not that you're too dumb to get it. And that really works well. And when you do that with MBAs, my God, they don't shut up.
That's a good
point. It's just a little technique to do it.
That's about encouraging, enabling people to communicate. It's about making it a safe space, isn't it? It's similar strategy. If I'm going to throw a question out there, I always give them a few minutes to discuss it in twos or threes. Mm. And so I want an idea from a group, not from an individual. And then it softens the putting your hand up. And you, not that you would ever say that's wrong, because that's going to shut every conversation down after that. It's back to how you encourage the right behaviours, isn't it? Which I think we've been talking about over the course.
I think another thing with young people as well is we don't realise that their self-esteem is one of the lowest it's ever going to be. And so this idea of looking stupid in class is absolutely rips their heart out if they look stupid in class. And that's something we also have to take.
It's a great point. And not just as a student, even a young person in an organisation. If you're in a meeting and you're having to stand up and speak, I know from personal experience in the past, when I was much younger, you were terrified and tongue-tied. Mm-hmm. And the stress that causes you, because you think you're being judged. You think, you know, and in some cases, unfortunately, you were, but that's a poor culture. In a really positive culture, you're not being judged, you're being encouraged. And developing skills like being able to stand up and speak in a calm, relaxed manner is an aspirational target for people that should be encouraged.
Now, one of the other things, I actually spend a lot of my time measuring things like self-esteem, as Dave pointed out, that's what I do. Yeah. And one of the other times that self-esteem is really low is that midlife crisis that men have, they're 42 to 45-ish. Yet most guys who are managers are in that bracket. And yet we're saying, why don't our managers communicate to us? And that's that I don't want aggressive feedback off people. And that's often a reason managers don't want to communicate with that idea. And I think that's something we miss sometimes.
Yeah. And I think also as well, it's important to realise even when you get older and you get to our ages, you've still got areas where you've got doubt, where you're unsure. And people think, well, you're in your 50s or 60s or whatever. You know, you appear to be quite confident. You can still be filled with self-doubt. It's important to recognise that.
That goes back to the idea, this is the academic coming out, this thing called the domains of self-esteem. The domain of self-esteem is, I'm good at that, but I'm not good at that. So we tend to stay within our domains of self-esteem, the stuff we're good at, and we hope to God that nobody's ever going to tackle us on something that I'm not so good at.
Brilliant. I mean, it's been a great conversation. There's loads in there. Just to sum it up, one or two practical advice, takeaways for organisations, managers seeking to kind of get better in terms of their communication. What's your top two or three? I know I'm distilling lots of complexity down to bullet points, but you know, what are the things we really need to be thinking about?
I think an open culture where you can encourage people to be innovative, encourage people to express ideas in a safe environment. The culture is so important. There are certain environments where you have to have certain rules, say from a organisations with a strong safety requirement. So you can have rigid rules there. But outside that, it's really important to be able to allow people to express ideas, feel safe to do so. Absolutely important. It's the only way you grow and develop.
Brilliant. George?
Man and Woman comes back to this idea of training line managers because they tend to do the most communication with their teams and stuff. If you want to spend money on your training budget, get your line managers trained. Now, when I've gone into organisations and we've done training, the people who resist the training more than anything else are the senior people. They all believe that they've got something to lose by having a training. So line managers do group training where we do it together. But if you try to do that with senior managers, they won't buy it. You've got to do one-to-one training with them because they don't like to show their weaknesses, those domains of what we're not good at. Okay, so individual line managers. So individual for senior managers, group for line managers. Spend your money doing that.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, both. Final question. You get another crack at the whip with this one, George, if you want. But we've asked everybody over the series, who's your management hero? That can be personal, can be professional, somebody who's inspired or influenced you in your career.
Well, I've got a very strong interest in sport, how that can, what you can learn from sport, apply that to personal life and business. There's a chap, I don't know if you've heard of him, Timothy Galway. He's written a series of Inner Game books, Inner Game of Golf, Inner Game of Work, Inner Game of Tennis. He was a former tennis player. And it's all about understanding we've all got a voice, almost like a self-won voice, a critical voice telling us what to do. It's getting that out of the way and letting, from a sporting perspective, a natural flow, allowing things to happen, allow your body from a sporting perspective to let things happen. In a business perspective, again, take away that negative voice, that critical voice that we've all got inside us and just allow ourselves to explore. So he's got a series of books, very, very interesting and very informative for me. That's Timothy Galway.
Brilliant. Thank you. George?
When I've done the past two of these, I always talked about my original boss called John O'Neill. But today I'm going to go something different.
Brilliant.
And the inspiration for me is the people who are banging away on these small and medium enterprises. I've had a go at this for 17 years, I think I run my own businesses for. And I don't do it no more because it's hard. And the guys who I talk to all the time are banging away. And you know what? You live in this little bubble of, God, it can't be this hard. We're all banging on the same drum. We're all having the same problems. And this budget we just had is killing everybody at the moment. So guys, you're my heroes. If you're still out there in the game banging that drum, keep at it. It's tough.
That's brilliant, George. That's something I'd absolutely echo and a great point to end on. Again, thank you both very much. If people want to contact you to reach out, how can they do that, Stephen?
They can contact me on LinkedIn, Stephen Peacock, RFN Business and Personal Coaching. I'd be more than happy to engage with anybody that would like to have a chat with me.
Brilliant. Thank you. And George?
George Medine. I'm on LinkedIn as well. Or you can go into Bradford University's staff page and find George Medine there.
Brilliant. And equally, if you want to reach out to us generally about what we do in terms of business and community engagement, you can find the newly relaunched business community engagement website very easily. If you want to reach out to me, it's d.p.spicer@bradford.ac.uk. On social media, it's at Dave P. Spicer or at Brad Management to follow the university account. Or if you want to email our business and community engagement account, it's bace@bradford.ac.uk. Thank you both very, very much. Enjoyed the conversation and thank you for your morning.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed it.
If you've got a project that you'd love to get done, but you're struggling with the time and resources to do that, that's something that we can help you with. Bradford Business Challenge projects are where we get our students to do, as part of their dissertation, a piece of applied management work for a business like yourselves. Either one of our final year undergraduate or MSc students, with the support of an academic mentor, will be able to work on that project for you. There's no cost for you as a business. All we ask for you is to set up
with us that project, give us a kind of outline brief that the student will go away and work into a full proposal for you, and then you'll be meeting and liaising with them and their academic advisor to get that project delivered. Because we have multiple students doing these over the course of the year, there's usually a group of students looking for any project at one time. So if that's something that you're interested in and you'd like to know more about, please reach out to us at base@bradford.ac.uk.